And what I say to myself a lot is get over yourself.
Hi team, this is another English episode for you on the menu today, and with what a guest. You have to know that I really and deeply love getting into these conversations from the bottom of my heart. They inspire me personally so much every single time, just the way our new team member does too. She had absolutely nothing to do with football for most of her life, just to turn it all around in the blink of an eye and to become a true leader, trailblazer, and living legend in women's football. And by now, you already know that our conversations in this podcast are so much more than just business or just sports. We always go deeper, and so did we today. We talked about Buddhism, about how we all are interconnected and therefore can't ignore women, duh, obviously. About football, about the first and only club who pays their women's and men's team equally, where women's football is headed, and so much more. But enough from my side. You should go ahead and listen for yourself. This is our new team member. Welcome, Karen Dobre.
And what I mean by that, mm-hmm. is,
interesting.
Yeah, you know, because I practice Buddhism. I've practiced it for years and years. Not in, like, I still eat meat, actually, so I'm not a very good Buddhist. But then I always say it's Buddhism, not shouldism. You know, it's not about should. So, but I chant every day, you know, to try and clear my mind and kind of get a bigger perspective. And in Buddhism, they talk about the ego, you know, the small ego and the big ego. And sometimes, you know, I get in the way of myself and I just mm-hmm. have to get over myself because I'm second guessing or I'm making a big deal out of it and thinking that I'm the center of the universe and that it all, like, everything depends on me and, you know, all this kind of thing. So if I get over myself, I lose that self-consciousness and that embarrassment that can stop you, you know, even doing things like this, Lisa, you know, but performing. Really, because I just get into a much better rhythm, really, with the universe and an understanding that I'm not such a big deal, really. I'm a little speck of dust in the cosmos, and that's brilliant, you know. So I say, get over yourself.
That's so interesting, and I love it. And at first, and maybe this is where something could get lost in translation, I thought you're like being strict with yourself. You're like, oh, come on, Karen, don't be like that. No, but that's actually really nice, even though I do hope that you're not keeping yourself too small at the same time, you know?
But we live in a society that is quite, really quite narcissistic. And I think that it encourages us to judge ourselves and present ourselves. And I really think it's important if I can just be me. And I can only just be me if I get over myself, if that makes sense. But yeah, I've learned to say, if someone gives me a compliment, I've learned to say thank you.
That's good.
Yeah, I've learned to say thank you. That's very kind. I don't start saying, oh, but. So yeah, I know what you mean. But yeah, I know it really helps me to take action, you know, and move forward in my life if I just get over myself. Yeah.
I really like that. And I mean, what I just said is coming from the place, you know, even within this podcast universe, where I keep meeting, especially women who go like, oh, yeah, but like, I'm not a big deal, or like who come from big time imposter syndrome, or, you know, just don't believe in themselves just enough to take up space. So that's why I said that. And I love how you say, I like, or how you feel this being the center of the universe, and you're like, no, you're not. So just do it. And I Well, you resonate with that a lot.
It's this funny thing, isn't it? It's this funny non-binary thing, this duality where you are and you're not.
Yeah.
No, so both things are true at the same time. And so, you know, for the moment, when you're doing something, you are. But in order to get there, you're not, you know. So, you know, otherwise I overthink and I'm too self-conscious. But, you know, when I'm doing something, it's about me. And I want to, it has to be, in order to get a message across and et cetera, et cetera. It all works. It all works together.
It's so interesting. And I love how you mentioned the Buddhism part, because that's one of my big notes that I wrote down. Tell me how you got involved with it, because we do live in a very Western, very Christian environment for sure. The UK is very Christian as well.
Yeah.
How did you start practicing Buddhism, even though you're eating meat? And that's fine. I think that's totally fine.
Well, thank you very much. I started to practice Buddhism in 1991 when my best friend at the time wasn't available to go to the pub. She was always going to these strange meetings. And I was like, well, where are you going? And she was going, I go to Buddhist meetings and we chant together. And I thought this was very strange. But, you know, because I love her, I said to her, well, I want to come with you. She goes, really? I said, yeah, I really want to come and see what it's about. So I went to this meeting and they were talking about a Buddhist concept of turning poison into medicine. So when something, when something really bad happens to you, to be able to turn it round so that it actually fuels your life in some way, so that, you know, failure becomes something to learn from, or, you know, and the symbol that they use is the amazing lotus flower that has, you know, grows in all this mud and this really the dirty shit that it grows in. And it's so beautiful.
But
so beautiful on the top. So you need that shit to become amazing. You know, is that concept. And I just loved that concept because, you know, life is shit sometimes. And going to this meeting, I was very inspired because I was brought up Catholic, you know, Roman Catholic, really, but I'd stopped believing in God. It didn't really make sense. And this made sense to me. So I thought, well, even though the chanting doesn't make sense, I'll give it a try. Mm-hmm. And so I've been doing it for years. And I think the main thing about it that really appeals to me is that you kind of have to, it's very freeing because you have to take responsibility for your own circumstances. So there's no God that you're praying to. You're chanting to reveal your own what's called Buddhahood, which is simply courage, compassion and wisdom. So every day you're chanting to reveal what's already there inside you. And there's no middleman. So it's just up to you. And I find it very liberating and very compassionate religion. And yeah, so that happened in 1991. And, you know, a lot has happened with my Buddhist practice. It's been amazing. I mean, I really do think it's saved my life on occasion, but if we go there, we'll be all day talking about that. So
We can go there just for a little longer. How would you say it saved you?
Okay, yeah. All right then.
I'm very interested.
Okay, so back in 1996, when I was a counsellor in the music industry, so I was counselling people at Polygram Records, managing their counselling service, and I was also modelling because I'd just started. So I was part-time counselling and part-time modelling. And I was basically working all the time, like, you know, just in the evenings I was counselling. I was getting up early to go to castings or work. And it was all, I was doing a lot. Anyway, that's relevant. So then I started to get nosebleeds, you know, and I started to bruise everywhere. And I went to the doctor and they said, you've got to go to hospital. You've got, ITP, which is idiopathic thrombocytopenia. So it's a shortage of platelets in the blood, and platelets are what make the blood sticky, but they didn't know why. So idiopathic, they didn't know what was causing it. Mm-hmm. But it was dangerous because any time you could get a bleed into the head, Like, so they said, don't go horse riding. Not that I ever went horse riding, but don't do anything like jump out of a plane, or because you could die. And in fact, if your platelets go low at any time, you could just spontaneously hemorrhage. So it was a really scary, it's life threatening. So this went on for 9 months. And in the end, I kept a food diary. And I found at that time I was vegetarian, actually. And I was eating a lot of tahini, which is a sesame seed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And which is great. I love tahini.
Really healthy, right? And I loved it. And I used to keep it in my handbag because if I was hungry, I'd have a snack of that because I knew it was good for me. And, I said I was working all the time. So, you know, it was an irregular lifestyle. And, anyway, what I found I went to different doctors, different consultants. I went everywhere. I was having my blood count 3 times a week at the hospital. And if it was too low, I'd have to go in. And if it was okay, I could go back to work.
Stressful.
Really stressful. And I knew anyway, because I'd get symptoms. If I'd sit down on a hard chair, some days I'd get up and my bum was black. You know, just bruising everywhere from nothing.
Crazy.
Yeah. So basically, the food diary, I realized every time I'd had tahini the day before, my blood count was low. So we did a challenge in the hospital and I had to eat like loads of tahini, but under, you know, restricted circumstances.
Yeah.
And we found that was the link. And it was amazing because they didn't know what was causing it. And so they could send my blood away with tahini and put it in test tubes and work out the track the antibodies. So, but this only happened through lots of chanting. So they put me on steroids. I couldn't sleep. So I was chanting all night. And I was chanting that if I could find the cause of this, because it went on for months, you know, if I could find the cause, I wanted it to help other people. Because in Buddhism, if you can, it's called the middle way. If you want something to happen, if you can see the benefit for yourself and others and the world, then it will happen. So I was chanting in this particular way and seeing this really big perspective on the individual self. And this is how I came to start the food diary. And this is how I came to challenge my body with the tahini. And that was then written up in British medical journals, you know, like the British medical, the Lancet and things. And I hope this was years ago, but I hope to help people. So that is how Buddhism has, I believe, saved my life, made me take action.
It's so interesting. And I would love to come back to the chanting just for another second. You mentioned it at the very beginning as well, because that's still a practice or a thing that you practice day to day, right?
Yeah.
What kind of chants are they?
Oh my goodness. Okay, so the chant is,
you know, a regular sports podcast.
Okay. Yeah, regular sports podcast. I have taught a couple of women footballers to chant, to be fair, in the past, you know, because it's hard, women's football, you know, it's different. There's so many obstacles. Nam-myoho renge kyo. So nam means I devote myself to, and myoho renge kyo is the title of the Lotus Sutra. And each of those phrases means something very profound. So like myo is manifest, ho is what we can't see, what's hidden. Renge is cause and effect. Every cause you make has an effect. Even if you can't see it now, at some point in the future, that cause is made, that effect must come out. And kyo is the thread that runs through everything, whether it's me, you, a stone, a car, a tree, everything. So everything is interconnected. There's mutual interdependency between everything. So when you devote yourself to, you say nam to devote yourself. So it's nam myoho renge kyo, nam myoho renge kyo, nam myoho renge kyo. So that's what I chant and that's what it means. And it feels very powerful, especially when you do it with other people.
That is so interesting. And I mean, I knew a little bit about Buddhism, of course, and we have like basic things that we know, but it's really so nice. It's so soft and yet so strong, you know? It's not trying to convince anyone.
No, I hope not. I mean, sometimes I've been bawling my eyes out chanting, and sometimes I've been so angry chanting, and
Yeah,
sometimes
I
I'm
can
quite.
imagine.
So it's not always soft, but sometimes it's really soft. And I don't know. I wouldn't push it on anyone. It works for me. But I'm a terrible Buddhist. I used to do it. I used to do it every day, twice a day, and I really quite lapsed sometimes. But I still always go back to it, and I love it, and it makes sense of the world for me.
It is so interesting. And this is a great start into our podcast, We've learned so much in just, I don't know, 10 minutes about you. So you're a Buddhist. You were a model. You're a counselor in the music industry. And obviously, since this is a sports podcast, there's something we haven't yet mentioned. And Karen, in my podcast, all the team members, you're a team member now yourself. Yes.
Lovely.
They get to describe themselves, and I always use the picture of the FIFA card, but obviously, I don't care about how hard you can actually hit a ball or you can actually run, but just give us a couple of bullet points that our listeners, our audience should know about who Karen Dobre is.
Can't play football. Really bad at kicking a ball. Female players have told me to try and do it with the side of my foot and not my toes, because then it's better. Probably if I could play, would try to get in goal, because I have a really good span of my arms,
And you're tall, that's good.
and tall, but I feel like I might snap, if the ball hit me. But just dreadful, really, at football. But really, really keen on the social impact of football and what it means to, well, our genders, the genders in our society. And really quite a feminist and quite cross about the way female football has been treated. Is that okay? Do you want my star sign? And
That's
would you?
I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm sure some people would love your star sign, but that's great for me for now. And maybe just one little addition from my side. You were a board member of the first football club, I think, in this world who paid women and men the same. Lewis FC. You actually called it Equality FC. And that's how I feel like your love for football and the wish to create equality and have the social or create the social impact in this, really important sport for our society really came from. So maybe you can tell us about Equality FC, of Lewis FC, and how you got involved with them.
Of course. So Lewis FC is the first and only, as far as we're aware, pro or semi-pro club in the world to have equal playing budgets for men and women. And this is this, but it's about much more than that. I think sometimes pay is a red herring, as in it's like something people look at without thinking about everything else. And really, it's about equal resources, playing on the same pitch, how you esteem women. How you
I
value
like
them
that.
is really, really what it's about. So for me, I've written a book about it. I famously did not like football because I thought it was just men. I had a sister. My dad wasn't into football. There was no kind of football in our family, and I just thought. I lived near Wembley in London growing up, so Wembley Stadium is
Of
my,
course, I watched the Lionesses win the European title there for the first time in a long time.
Amazing. But when I was growing up, when I was living there, I couldn't get the train, the tube train, if there were football supporters there, because they were aggressive. Well, not aggressive. They were kind of like they'd drunk a lot of beer. And they were singing, and they were great big men, and it just felt quite threatening. So that put me off football. And then all I saw on the TV was this kind of boring, droning noise and this game with men. And I didn't understand what it was about. And then in the playground at school, the boys always used to play football, and they used to take up all the space of the playground playing football, and girls didn't play football. So for me, and there was all this hooliganism as well in the 70s and 80s from England fans. And it was just horrible. It was on the newspapers, and it was something I never would have wanted to get involved in. But then my husband is a big football fan, always has been. And when we moved to Lewes in Sussex in 2007, he immediately used to go to the games, and the Lewes FC games. Then in 2009, Lewes FC was on the brink of financial ruin. Yeah. And he and five other fans bought it for £1, nothing, and paid off all of its debts, and then decided to make it mutualised, so fan-owned. So anybody anywhere in the world could buy a share and own this football club. And directors would be... First, the directors were those six men who had mutualised it. And then directors would be elected every 3 years from the ownership, and everyone got a vote as to who should be on the board. And it wasn't about squeezing profits for private shareholders anymore. Yeah. It was about creating value for the community. So in 2016, my husband said to me, you know, you're a feminist, you know, what would you say if we paid the women down at the football club the same as the men? And I didn't even know that women played football. And so I said, what? There are women and you don't pay them the same as men. What is wrong with you? This is your football club. Why are you being so sexist, right? And he was like, no, you don't understand football. And I said, you're too right. I don't understand football.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to understand football. Anyway, I thought I'll go to a match. So I went to a women's match, and it wasn't what I thought football was. It was amazing. And it was amazing because...
Yeah, I was just about to ask. Yeah, amazing how.
Yeah, two things. It was more relaxing than I thought. I thought it would be loads of men shouting and scary.
Drunk.
And it just wasn't. It was like you could have a cup of tea, the people just chatting. And the atmosphere is beautiful. If you ever go to England and you want to visit Lewes, tell me and I will give you a tour.
I'd love to.
We're in the South Downs. We're in a national park. So we've got these beautiful hills everywhere, and we've got old flint walls of this ground that's very historic. You know, the monks used to pan for salt there, why it's called the dripping pan. They used to get salt.
The dripping pan, yeah. So I read your book, so I feel like I know a little bit.
you already know, right? So that was one thing. But the second thing was these amazing women. So there were these amazing young women, and I had just... for a long, long time, or maybe never, seeing women behaving like this. I mean, I don't want to make myself out to be a right old crusty, like some sort of, but it's just that you should, you know, it's just like they were like shouting at each other. They were focused on the ball. They were sweating. They were like taking up space.
Yeah, strong.
Strong. And in this public place, everyone watching them. I was thinking, I want my daughter here. I want my friends here. This is the antidote to all that rubbish in society that says women are objects, that says women are ornaments, that says women aren't agents of their own life. This is what we need to be seeing. And all this time, I've thought football was men and the opposite of this. And actually, this is the thing. This is the answer. I had this epiphany, and I
love this. This is the answer. Yeah.
Yeah, to all the shit. Because I was really cross. It was like the time of like hashtag Me Too, hashtag Time's Up, hashtag Gender Pay Gap. And I was just like, what is going on in our world? You know, that we, and listen, it's only getting worse at the moment.
Oh my God.
So we need it even more. We need women's football even more.
Yes.
And so this is the way I got involved. I was so, I loved it. I wanted to see more. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know the rules. I didn't know why they were throwing the ball in. I didn't know why they were, I just about worked out which way they were going, you know, on the pitch. But it was, I just thought, this is amazing. And I really want to discover more. And I want more women to see this. which was a lucky thing to think, because the problem was that they needed more attendances.
Yes.
Because they didn't get as much as the men. And so critics were saying, you shouldn't pay them the same as the men. They don't deserve it. They don't get the same gate figure.
Which is what people say until this very day.
They still say it, and they're really wrong to say it. And the reason they're wrong is because people like me didn't even know it existed. So how can you? It's not, what I'm saying is, it's not a level playing field in terms of cultural recognition, in terms of marketing, and every, not just, forget pay. People
public
don't
attention,
even
media
yeah,
coverage.
People don't even know about it, is what I'm saying. They don't know. They haven't tried it as a product, right? So I was so angry when I found out about, you know, the ban. There's been a ban in Germany as well. The ban yes. in England on women's football, 50 years. And all that time, the England men's team had a monopoly over the broadcasting rights, over the media attention, over sponsorship.
Yeah.
And see, what really gets to me is, and then they say, oh, yeah, but the women don't get the same crowds, right? Oh, please. Why do you think that is? I'll tell you what they think it is. They think it's because it's not as entertaining. But then they're not me. I prefer a woman's match than a men's match. So they're talking for themselves. And that also gets me. And that is why football is a little microcosm of big P patriarchy. You can see the way it works. You can look at football. It's so extreme that you can see the way patriarchy is working everywhere else with privilege. And, you know, so, yeah, I was really fired up after that first match.
You're still fired up today, I love it.
I'm still fired up. It doesn't go away because it's still happening. Doesn't. Until it's solved, until we've changed, until we've, like, gone much further in this journey, way past equality, then I'm still fired up.
You are, and we need that, and we love it. And so we know how you got in touch first with football now. Charlie, your husband, asked you if they should pay women and men equally. And obviously, you said, heck yes. And so what happened after that? Because your story doesn't end with your first match at the Dripping Pan.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, in another industry, forget football, in another industry, your husband comes up to you and says, should we pay the women the same as the men? Really? What are you going to say? Like, duh, yes. Like, really? So why is football so different? Do you know what I mean? Let's start there.
Of course.
Yeah, let's take the scales away from our eyes, because there's a lot of scales in front of people's eyes, especially men's eyes, I find, in football. So what happened after that, to answer your question, is I started to go and tell women, what I called unwelcome women, because they were unwelcome, but they didn't know they were unwelcome, like me, about Lewis FC. And I said to them, I know you don't like football, right? And this is groups like the Women's Institute and the Women's Equality Party and Brighton Women's Centre, you know, these different women's groups. I know you don't like football, because I'd ask them first, who likes football? A few hands would go up, but basically there's 50 people in the room and about two people, you know. So I know you don't like it, but come in solidarity with Lewis FC and gender equality, because this small club has become radical and people are saying it shouldn't be. So if you want to do something about gender equality, get yourself through the turnstile and be counted. And that way you've done something. Like, we can't normally do anything. You know, normally we just have to, like, accept this shit, right? Like, gender pay gap. But this, they've given you an opportunity to do something just by going to the match.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
So simple.
I was on the radio saying it to people. I got onto the local news channels and everything. And the thing is, you see, men had done this. Two men had fought for this equal playing budget.
Yeah, which is a highly feminist move, really. Amazing.
But so it was good for a woman to go and publicize it because, you know, I could teach other women. But it's very significant, I think, that two men did it. Because a lot of people say, you know, that, well, a lot of people think that, you know, it's only women that can come and be leaders and stuff. But in these kind of arenas where we're talking about gender equality, but it's never going to work if you leave it to women, because women don't have the power in these male bastions. These it's men who have to wake up and take action. And like Charlie, my husband, knows, I don't give him much praise for it. I think that's normal, right? But it isn't really normal, right? So he...
Unfortunately not.
No, it's not normal.
Allies are rare, but important. So thanks, Charlie.
Yeah, thank you, Charlie and Ed, because they were the ones that started it. And they, it's amazing that they did it. But, you know, it's also a shame that we have to praise them for doing it.
I know.
You'd think that other men would stand up and say, no, this is really wrong that we pay the women 10 times less than the men. This isn't right. Never mind about gate figures and things. It's just not right. Yeah.
I know. Well, and it happened, though. You not only mobilized the women in your community to come, you actually bought in on the whole project and became a board member to drive the change you wanted to see.
Absolutely. Well, more women came. I remember that we quadrupled our women's gate in two seasons. We also, the men's gate also went up. In a few more seasons, we were aligned with the men's gate. So the two figures were similar on average. So with the women, we were playing teams like, you know, Manchester United and Liverpool and things like this. So when we played teams like that, we would sell out. And then when we played in normal league, we would still get much more than previously, but not sell out. So when you averaged it, we were the same as what the men got every week, which was much more of a normal, yeah, a sort of a constant figure. So yeah, it worked very well. We also, the sponsors that we got in were incredible because of equality. It took a season or two for them to wake up. But
normal.
Yeah, but then we started to get some. I remember in 2021, we got a clothing brand called Lyle & Scott, and we did a six-figure deal, which was just incredible. We got some good sponsors. And of course, because we're community owned, we got many more global owners, because this was the only way you could have a stake in the only football club to equalize its playing budgets, pay women the same. So we found we had, I think we still have, like, you know, 15-20% of our owners in North America. We've never tried.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. So all these good things happened. And then I was, first of all, I was co-opted onto the board because of the work I was doing on attendances and in fan engagement. And then I was elected onto the board. And it was great because then I had much more authority to change the ground. And, you know, it was much easier to do things, to do all the things that I really felt as a woman would make me want to keep coming back to the dripping pan, you know, like Prosecco on tap, oat milk, you know.
Because, oat milk.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. And why can I get oat milk for my coffee at Starbucks and Cafe Nero, but not at the football ground? Like, why? Like, what? Why? And then vegan food, because, like, my friends and a lot of female footballers, you know, as well. And, you know, they wanted vegan pies as well as meat pies. Why not? Let's all have a choice. Let's be inclusive.
Yeah.
Places to feed children, specifically dedicated to feeding. And, you know, it's not that we had loads of people that wanted to feed children, but if you have signs and signals up saying that, then when the away fans come, they know what kind of ground this is.
Yeah. 'Cause,
you know, so we're signalling to people that everyone's welcome.
Yes.
People with babies, people with children, people with well-behaved dogs. We have dog bowls. Everyone's welcome, right? So, and I was able to do events specifically for women. And I set up the Sisterships Network, which was organisations that promote and help women and girls in some way. That we had very interesting mutually beneficial relationships with, which led to all sorts of, content for the club and also activations for the club, that all these things helped define our brand as Equality FC. Yeah. So it was just, everything worked very well. Yeah.
You even went so far to realize, first of all, that the way male and female fans behave, or like fans who watch men's games or women's games, you know, have a different kind of experience, and they chant and shout in a different way. So you organized workshops to chant. Really.
It all happened very organically, because I remember my friend Jamie, who, a man, saying, Aston Villa, we were playing Aston Villa at home, and the Aston Villa fans were a group of about four or five men, right, were supporting their women's team, and they had a drum and they were shouting so loud and we weren't saying it much. And Jamie said, you're supposed to chant, you know, you women, you don't know how to chant. And so we did a chanting workshop at my house. Our nickname is the Rooks. So we, Rooks, because Rooks has two meanings. It's the birds that nest around the dripping pan, but also it's a rook is a castle in chess. And we have this Norman castle in Lewes on the hill, and it's part of our badge. So we're the Rooks from Lewes Town. And so we made up these chants using rook, like we used we will rook you, like the queen song.
Love right? it. Yes. Yeah.
So we had that. And then we started to chant, and we found that with these new women customers, you know, it was quite a big ask to start shouting at this green pitch in front of you and using your like lower your abdomen to chant and take up space together and do it three times. And so we did a bit of rehearsing before the matches in the stands with this female comedian. Donna came in and shouted at everyone. And then we started to do actual workshops, you know, and we'd start with the New Zealand team's haka, you know, the rugby team's haka, to get in the mood, like we'd all take up space and be strong women, you know, and then we'd chant. And it was so funny. It was just a lot of these things were very sort of community-based activities that brought us all together and were fun, a lot of fun to do. And we could branch out. I remember doing a chanting workshop for the local police, you know, the women in the police force.
everyone.
We could all do it. We did it at festivals. Yeah, it was great. So, yeah, things like that. But you're right to say that the men's fans and the women's fans were different, because where I thought you were going was the culture's different, isn't it, at the two?
I mean, also, yeah, as you just mentioned, it's about for men, I feel, and I'm not trying to judge here, I'm just trying to describe.
Yeah.
It's really about letting stuff go. It's about getting drunk and shouting and being able to say things you're not allowed to say at your workplace or in your home, and I feel it comes with some hostility, with some aggression. Men, especially, I feel in certain countries, I work in basketball too, and this really applies to the Serbian fans, to the Greek fans. They love to take off their shirts. It's a thing. I don't get it, but it's a thing. And that's not how women watch a game. They come with their families. They come with their grandmothers. I don't know. It's I think it's quieter, but it's okay. It's just different. It's not better or worse. It's more inclusive, as you said. I feel like people are taking more care of each other. There's less alcohol involved.
Yeah.
It's a different experience.
I love what you say, because a lot of people, you make some really good points there, Lisa. You know, a lot of people thought equality meant the same, you know, doing exactly the same. But it doesn't. It means giving people an equal opportunity to enjoy something or play something or whatever it is. And that means looking at the differences between people and what they want to do, and then respecting and even celebrating those differences, you know. So what I really noticed was, well, what you said, really, that at women's matches, you're right, because they take place on a Sunday in England, because the men play on Saturday, so women on Sunday. And on Sunday is really a lot of families have their roast lunch, you know, in the middle of the day.
Sweet, yeah.
Yeah. So the women would want to bring that whole family, and instead of having their roast lunch, because women's games kick off at 2 p.m., they would have their pie and their mash and their gravy at the dripping pan. But then you're going to bring granddad, and you're going to bring the kids, and you're going to bring the dog, you know, because you're coming, you're doing what you would otherwise do at home. And also, I think you're so right. There's this poem in about Newcastle Football Club by a poet called Sean O'Brien, and he says that for men it's a world without women or work, football. And I think that's so true, and I think let them have that world as well, you know, let them have it. Like, I don't want the women's matches to be the same as the men's, because they have different meanings for different people. And so,
oh, that's well said, that's very well put.
Yeah, but
with
I just
different meanings.
But this is hard won wisdom, because first I thought, you know, we want, well, let, actually it's not that we wanted it to be the same, it's just let's see what happens. And people say no, you should get people chanting, they should be able to swear and be abusive. Yeah, but there is a line when you've got children there. It does make it different. And also, when groups of women come together, the meaning of shouting and chanting to the women on the pitch is somehow much more about having their back, supporting them.
I love that.
Really getting behind them. Like, you know, whereas with the men, sometimes it's about telling them off.
So definitely.
No,
or just insulting the opponent.
Yeah. Yeah, or the ref or whatever. And it's really interesting. As the women's game grows, I really hope it retains this character of inclusion and even the kind of people that will come to the matches. I mean, it's much more gender diverse, you know, in the women's side, and it's
because it's safer. Yes. Also on a psychological level.
100%. And when there's been surveys of women's fans as opposed to men's fans, we find that they're much more tech savvy. And mm-hmm. although that they buy less beer, they buy more merch. You know, so it's very interesting, like how you might want as a business to work with that is different. Yes. You know, so you market things differently, and you... you know, you listen to the fans and you don't just assume that you're going to do the same kind of match day revenue division as you would do at a men's match. It's just very, I find it very interesting. Yeah.
So interesting. And there's so much potential that's still untapped,
because
it still hasn't, I feel like the whole women's bubble still hasn't found its full potential, because as you said, we have been keeping it shut out for such a long time, and we just still haven't really discovered everything about it yet. But yet you guys at Lewis FC, and you especially in your role within the board, have done so much, have pushed so much forward. For how many years again have you been
I'm not on the board now, so I was on the board in 2019, and I left the board at the end of 2022. So I did about 3.5 years on the board, and then I was an ambassador, and I continued to mentor with on the commercial side. So I've been involved since 2017, and now I'm involved in helping look for investment for the women's side, because I feel like we've done equality. We've moved to equity, where we actually had to pay the women, give the women more than the men, because we were in the second highest tier. And, you know, it's, as you say, Lisa, the potential of women's football is that you can move faster and you can see things changing more quickly. Like on our men's side, it's much harder to promote because of the structure and the mature product. Mm-hmm. On the women's side, you can promote. Still, even if you're a small club, you've still got that chance. It's changing, but you can still promote. So we were trying to stay in the championship. And although I wasn't on the board, it was clear that they were paying, you know, they put more into the coaching side of the women. So they had nutritional coaches. They had people, sports scientists tracking their periods, you know, things like that you need. And unfortunately, we got relegated. So we're back in the third tier now. But what we're looking for is investment in the women so that we can separate actually from the men. So we will move from equality through equity to what I call emancipation.
Yeah.
Right. So the story, that will be the story, I hope. And we'll be able to give the women what they need to fulfill the potential that they have.
Mm. So interesting. You might not know, but I'm an investor in FC Victoria Berlin who just accomplished this very step. And Victoire Kojevina Reynal actually was on this podcast as well. So we know a little bit about Mercury 13. We know a little bit about, everything that comes with investing into women's sports.
Yeah.
So how do you feel is this part of the, I keep saying the bubble, of the bubble evolving? I know that Victoria had this US investor now, which is interesting because Europe is a huge country, but apparently there was not a match. And for certain reasons, your endeavor with Lewis and Mercury 13 didn't work out. So how are you approaching this whole idea?
I do. I love Victoire, you know, and her uncle, John Reynal. They're amazing people. And I was very sad that it didn't work out. But I think partly Lewis weren't investment ready, you know.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because you have, so, you know, there would be a lot, there's a lot to do sort of legally with the men's team and the women's team to get the women's team ready for separate investment, to work everything out, you know, is quite a lot. And also, you know, the community ownership model means that sometimes the governance structure can let you down. So you don't know who is going to be elected to the board. So, you know, sometimes it's very difficult to be on the board with people that have different opinions. And it's hard to get things done in a real business way. It's one of the reasons I stepped down. It was becoming too difficult. I decided not to stand for re-election after my term finished. But so I think that I loved the story about Victoria Berlin and Monarch. I love what Michelle Kang is doing with the London City Lionesses and the team in France. I love what is happening, and I think that, you know, as we always say, it's not a charity, it's a proper investment. I think that with these investments in women's football, it's more likely to achieve its potential than when you have big men's clubs just passing money across the table or resources across the table from the men's side, because then you're dependent on the men. And if the men's team are in any way, you know, if they need a new changing room or they're not doing very well or they want to buy a new player, they can easily just cut what the women have. Mm-hmm. So when you have these independent investments like this, I think it's a very good sign for women's football generally, because my fear is always that women's football will just become a smaller version of men's, rather than, and I think what can happen is it can become bigger than men's football. I know that is a big thing to say, because, you know, we all know how big men's football is, but I think women's football has the potential because of its meaning. And not only has it got an amazing game to offer us, but it has this purpose of going against these stereotypes that hold us back, whereas men's football feeds into those stereotypes, really. So I'm not denigrating men's football. It's obviously it's brilliant. And obviously it serves a brilliant purpose for the people that love it. But I think women's football has a more radical purpose. And I think that the world needs to change, and we're heading towards, you know, a purpose-driven world, because the one that we've got at the moment is not working. So I just think women's football has this amazing potential if it's allowed to develop according to its own values, and these investors are going to allow that. So that's what I think, and that's what I'm happy about and feel positive about.
So cool. I love how you speak about this whole thing, this whole industry, and it really, you know, gives me hope and courage to believe that we can actually get there.
Yeah, look, we might not, don't get me wrong, it's qualified hope. Yeah, because
I mean, it all is.
Yeah.
But just hearing you say it gives me, you know, or like supports me in my thinking.
Good. Yeah, because do you know what it is, Lisa? Is we have to have the vision first.
Yes.
Because nothing will happen unless we can see that target somewhere. So like we have to imagine it. It's like what artists say, you know, nothing has ever existed in this world without someone imagining it first. So we have to imagine what women's football could be. And I think it could be huge and make return on investments, of course.
Mm-hmm. It has to be legit. It has to be, you know, every woman knows this feeling of having to be twice as good as her male counterpart. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is also, it also applies to women's football. So it has to be a great return on investment.
But you see, also like now you've made me think about Buddhism a lot, right? Now you've done that to me. And the thing is, it actually is the middle way, isn't it? Because you've got women's football making a return on investment as it becomes more popular and these players are properly resourced. And I don't just mean in money, but looked after medically and everything. You've got that happening. But also you've got this amazing message to girls and women that they can be strong agents of their own life, and boys and men, that they don't have to be like that, that they can actually let women have some of that, and they can cry and they can talk about their feelings and they can look after babies and children, get let off the hook and stop like killing themselves because they can't have an outlet for their feelings. So it's really in terms of the middle way, it works for everybody and also for business. So that's what gives me hope.
I kept coming back to what you said about your chant at the very beginning as well. Was it called the Kyo? The you know, thread.
The thread,
that
yes, exactly.
Interconnects everyone.
Yeah,
that's Kyo. Really, really a big part in all this as well, I think.
I think,
you know, if the women aren't thriving, we can't thrive as a society.
Of course we can't. Like, we all have to win together. Yeah. In the bigger picture, you know, because we are interconnected. It's such a mistake to think we're just individuals or even we're just one country. You know, everything we do has an impact on each other. So the same with men's and women's football and with all of us. Like, you know, that to me, even if you just by observing your family, your friends or the world around you, you can see that that is true. That is true. So, I mean, of course it works for women's and men's football. People just don't see, like, they're so short-sighted sometimes. But listen, Lisa, we can demonstrate it to them. We can have these conversations. We can do radical things that spark these conversations. And football is the best place to have these conversations because we're talking to men, and currently men have the power to affect change.
Definitely. So again, it gives me more hope that there seemingly are so many of those men at Louis FC trying to push the girls as well. And Karen, I could go on with you forever, but we have three little more categories.
Oh, do we? Oh, my goodness.
We do. And you get to pick what we're going on with blindly. You don't know what's in which
in those three bubbles. Oh, okay. The one in that hand. Yes. Yes.
We are. Oh, I'm excited to hear about your head coach next. Who or what, Karen, acts in your life or has acted in maybe one specific situation as a head coach for your life?
Oh, I was literally going to tell you about Emma Byrne, the Louis FC women's manager.
So we're connecting the throw-in and head coach. We can do that.
No, but lots of people. So a lot of people have like inspired me or helped me, motivated me in different ways. So, you know, well, my husband, I have to say, is one of them, Charlie. He's a really great marketing person, right? So he has these great ideas with words and things. You know, like how my book is called Pitch Invasion, but Bitch Invasion. That was his idea.
By the way, I couldn't find it first because I thought it was actually called Bitch Invasion. And, you know, Google wouldn't give me anything. I was like, wait, what's going on?
They won't, because I wanted to call it Bitch Invasion, but Amazon, my publishers said Amazon don't like bitch unless it's about a female dog, right? So you've got to, like, maybe calm. Yeah. Soften it.
Yeah.
So they suggested Pitch Invasion. So Charlie said, well, how about we make that P into a B with your lucky lipstick? You know, because my lucky lipstick. Yeah, I put that lipstick on and Lewis score, right? So if I'm at a match with the lucky lipstick in my pocket, I put it on and we score. I have to, it hasn't worked every single
it's
time.
Magic.
It's not every single time, but most times it's had some results. It's great. So it's called Pitch Invasion, or Bitch Invasion. So Charlie is a marketing whiz, really, and he has given me so many great ideas, and we work together, you know, so we do work together, and it's, let's give him some credit there. And then I want to credit Kelly Lindsay, who also is in my book, and she used to play for US Women, and... she's at Lewis still, and I think she's sporting director. Listen, the titles change so much at Lewis because we're so few.
Don't worry.
And we all have to do loads of stuff.
Everything.
Yeah. I think she's the sporting director. And in terms of like public speaking and performing, she has really helped me to just wing it, you know, to run with it, be myself, say what I really think. And, she captivates audiences, and I love seeing that, you know. So that, and I'm sure she's a very good coach, just because of how when I've done talks with her, she's very motivating, and she's brilliant. So there's her. And then there's so many people. There's people, you know, in my Buddhist groups. There's people from every career I've been in that have really inspired me, you know, whether it's been in modeling or in counseling. Being a counselor and listening to people's problems is very inspiring, because so many people go through so much hell and find their way out of it, and it's just, you know, that's a privilege, really. I feel like a very lucky person in many ways, because I've been very inspired by people. My mum's great. She's very, you know, she talks to everyone all the time, and she's made it easy. Never stops talking, right? So I mean, and you can tell it's rubbed off on me. But like, you know, she's an accidental networker, and so that has helped me too. Loads of coaches, really.
I really love it. You have a whole network of coaches around you, which is always important, I think. And you mentioned Emma, and I would suggest this is the Einwurf, the throw-in category, that we just, you know, smoothly move over into the next one.
Oh, well, this is what you said about, you know, wanting to platform something.
Yes.
So I thought I would, I was very quite literal about football. I thought about the Equal FA Cup Prize Fund.
Okay, let's go ahead.
So since 2018-19 at Lewis FC, we've been campaigning for an Equal FA Cup Prize Fund, because the FA Cup is our flagship competition. I believe you have DFB Pokal.
Ah, cute, yeah. I see you wrote it down.
Because es ist sehr schwierig für mich zu erinnern. Anyway, so we've been campaigning for an Equal FA Cup prize, because the gender-based disparity is huge, right?
Yes.
Huge. So it, 1 minute. Having said that, yours is bigger. Yours is a bigger, I couldn't believe it when I looked up how many euros. So the men in your DFB Pokal, 74.2 million euros in the total prize fund. The women, 1.7 million.
But
my God.
Karen.
Yeah.
Germany You know, we always think Germany is this really developed, modern kind of country, very important within Europe, very important within the whole economic, engine really within Europe. But in terms of equality, we are one of the countries that's the furthest behind in every single aspect. I was just thinking about this coming onto this podcast. We have this thing, it's called, this is my translation now, like spouse splitting. If you're getting married, like from a tax point of view, the person who makes more, which is by societal structures in 90% the man, has a huge tax advantage, which basically puts women into the position that it doesn't make sense for them to try to make more money because it's just being taxed at this insanely high percentage. So they
Wow.
stay in like part-time. We have a huge amount of women in part-time, which is hard for them then to advance into executive levels, into, positions of power and in positions where you could make actual decisions. And this is so deeply ingrained in our society. So it makes total sense. It's the same in freaking football, that it's the same in every single aspect of our lives. So
But that
I'm
needs to
sure it's worse in football as well.
change. So
It does.
you need to change that. Your politicians need to campaign, no?
We have a really conservative chancellor at the moment. I'm not seeing him supporting women at all, but it's horrible. So sorry for interrupting, but of course it's
No, it's
worse in
really
Germany.
interesting. I remember learning the phrase Kinderküche for about women, about German history and their place in
Oh,
society.
Kinderküche Kirche. Yeah. Oh,
Yeah,
perfect. Yeah. Bam.
Kinderküche. Yeah, and that's where women were supposed to be,
Exactly.
certainly not on a football pitch or in a big corporation as a CEO. But
Back to DFB Pokal. I'm
But
sorry.
yeah, no, not at all. But this is the thing, it relates, it connects. So, because what we, what, I'll say it again, what we do in football impacts the world and society because football speaks to men. So they're looking at it. So we need to change these big gender-based disparities in money. Money speaks to people. So we have, in the UK, we have this FA Cup prize fund, and the men I think get £23.5 million in total. The women I think it's £6 million in total. So the gap is terrible. It's not as big as the German one, unbelievably, unbelievable, but it's still terrible. So we campaign for an e equal FA Cup prize fund because it just makes sense. The male teams that win are always big Premier League teams that don't actually need the money. Yeah. Whereas the female teams always need the money. And it's divided up into stages and rounds. So every time losers win something, winners win something, you could be irrigating the women's game. You could be giving them, motivating them to play because, sometimes you get drawn an away fixture and you pay for the coach and you're never going to make that money back, even if you win. Even if you lose, you certainly won't. If you win, it's not enough to pay for the coach. This is terrible business. Yeah, this is no one in business does this, right? Except football. So we have got on our website, if you go to our website, equalfacup.com, we actually have a calculator where any England team can put their team in and find out how much better off they would be using our calculator for the FA Cup prize fund. And 84% of teams would be better off, including the men's teams, because it's always those top men's teams that win. So, we just want it to be fairer. And I think it's a really good, it was also the FA that banned women from playing football in 1921.
Same over here in 1955.
Yeah. So if they want to make reparations for the disgusting, abhorrent, terrible, shameful thing they did, this flagship competition would be the way to do it. Say sorry. They've never said sorry. Say sorry and make the, you know, put the money back in for the women, make up for what you did. Now, I've actually said this to people at the FA and they say, well, we're not the same people. Of course, we're, you know, we're not the same people that did that. And we're, you know, we've put loads of money into girls football and things like this. That isn't the point. Your organization did it. Of course, you're not the same people. Your organization did it. And that organization needs to show the world, make a statement about what they did, how wrong it was, and now put the money in. It's like, you know, Scotland, the country, recently issued a statement forgiving and showing compassion to all the women that were burnt as witches. They did this. That not only did they do that, but they made a tartan. You know, they have tartans in Scotland. They did one with the colours for black for the witches, grey for the ashes, red for the blood. And they did this. The amount of squares is the amount of women that were burnt. And that was to say sorry. It's really beautiful, right? And it was very sad, very beautiful, very significant. And I think, sad. Yeah, but I think if the FA or DFB Pokal was to come out and say, we are sorry for holding the women in football back and banning them, and we want to show that we are sorry because it's deeds, not words, that count. By equalising the fund for the prize, you know, that it, to me, it's obvious that they should do that. Let's get back to Buddhism. It's karmic. Mm-hmm. They created this karma. Then let's go all the way around and, you know, make it benefit everybody. So, yeah, I want to draw attention to Lewis FC's EqualFAcup.com. And I'd like to give you the good news that some other teams are now involved in that, like a lot of other women's teams. I know Dulwich are, Rugby Borough are. But the top, again, listen to this, the top women's teams associated with the Premier League, they can't get involved because, of course, the Premier League are involved in the FA. So it's it tells you a lot about how structures and systems work. But we will keep fighting because it's such a great idea.
I love this. This is inspiring me too.
Good.
I wasn't even aware of the numbers in Germany. Thank you for looking them up and bringing them up.
Yeah, let's be aware of those numbers because those numbers are shocking.
It's crazy.
This is a press release, Lisa. This is a press release. Tell people. Get on the radio, get on the TV. When people see those numbers, their jaws will drop.
What did you say? 74 million 74, and 1 million?
74.2 million for the men, 1.7 million for the women. What percentage is that? That's like I'm not good with maths. It's a tiny percent. Tell the newspapers. Tell Inga at the Berlin newspaper.
Yeah.
Make a story. It's great.
Wow. Yeah, we still have so much to do.
A global sisterhood.
Yeah, I love it. Yes. Yeah.
Let's all do it, you know. It's wrong. It's just wrong.
Love your input. This will definitely work for a little bit.
Yeah, I can see your brain. I can see your face. It's ticking away. The words are coming together and you're going to do something. I'm so happy.
Well, to not lose any time here on the podcast while I'm thinking what this is doing to me. Let's move on to our third and last category. It's the shootout. I prepared a little rapid fire kind of list of questions. You can answer them briefly. You can elaborate whatever you feel like. Okay?
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Modeling or counseling?
Oh, so hard. But I'm going to have to go for modeling's more fun, I'll be honest. But I'll go for counselling because I think that's more valuable. But it is 50-50. That's hard.
You did have a really good time modeling too, right? I just heard a podcast with you this morning and you said kind of like you never liked to be so tall and skinny. And you kind of, the way we started this podcast with the Buddhist model, right? You can always turn the shit into something beautiful, or what you don't like into something that's helpful. You really did that with modeling.
Poison into medicine.
Poison into medicine.
Poison into medicine, Lisa. Yeah, absolutely. I hated being so tall and skinny, and having, like, I'm really flat chested. Mm-hmm. I still am. But you know, my model agency said they would pay for me to have a boob job, and I refused. They said they would take it out of my wages, but I said no because,
crazy. Yeah, well, I would have been scared.
Yeah, it was quite scary at the time, but I said no. But it doesn't do a lot for your self-esteem when your agency says, we'll pay for you to have a boob job. But, it's all good resilience learned work, isn't it? It's all good resilience work.
Wow. Mm. Okay, but so counseling wins here.
Yeah, I think so. Mm.
What's your favorite memory of your time at Lewis FC?
I've got so many good memories. I'm going to say, we've done some good activations off the pitch, but I'm going to go for an on the pitch, because Tatiana Saunders, our goalie, scored a goal against Liverpool, a winning goal from her
goal.
Yes. So it's in the Guinness Book of Records as the longest goal by a female goalie.
Really?
I witnessed it. It was insane. And the celebrations were something else. Tatiana herself was like, it was like she was, she couldn't believe it. She was incredulous, even for an hour afterwards, like what she had just done.
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great one. That's a really good one. I love it.
I loved it. Yeah.
The next question is, what's your tip or recommendation to girls who would like to work in football?
Well, that's a very good one. I would say realize that you don't have to be your whole self all the time. So there are parts of yourself that you can use in different meetings and in different environments. But in order to be able to do that, you have to know yourself well. So for girls, get to know yourself well, get to accept even the shadow parts of yourself. Try to accept them, whether it's through therapy, whether it's through friends, journaling, whatever it is you do, meditating,
Buddhism, yeah.
it could be like just any way that you can really know and accept yourself gives you more of yourself to choose from when you are either on a football club board, which I hope you will be, or working within the football industry in any way, or even being a player, as well.
I like that. Knowing yourself better gives you more options to choose from.
Yeah.
That's deep. That's cool.
It's just what I've experienced. I think it's true. Be more of yourself. Stay interested in yourself. Stay interested in your process. Even now, like I'm nearly 58, I go somewhere and, I start to feel maybe left out. I think, maybe they don't like me or da, 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 da. So stay interested in that. Stay interested in your insecurities, because the only way to get over them is to accept them and work with them. So that's what I would say to girls, stay interested. Don't let it dominate you. It's part of you. It's part of you. Yes. Yeah.
That's really good too. Write or read a book?
Obviously it's both, but I've read, but I'm going to say write, because I loved writing my book. I never knew how much I would like this. Is my first.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I loved it. It was so great to just be on my own and be thinking and, putting it in a way, getting the words in the right pattern that people would understand, And I loved that process. I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
It's actually funny because I started reading the book prior to the Hamburg Football Summit, where we got to know each other. And I finished it after, and I realized after hearing your keynote during the summit, how much of your personality, like how much of your way of speaking is actually within the book.
Yes.
Like the way you build in a joke here or like play with a word, that's exactly the way you speak, and it's exactly the way it's in the book. It's fun. It's great.
Oh, good. It is. It's finding your voice and using your voice. And for too long, you know, as we know, Lisa, we might as well stick to the theme. Women haven't had their voice. Yeah. They haven't had the chance to use their real, their individual voice. So I think it's important to write our stories.
Yeah. How long did it take you to finish the book?
Well, you know, the book didn't take me long. It took me maybe 3 months or so. But the writing the book proposal took me over a year.
I see.
Yeah, it was harder. And obviously the book kept changing a bit as well. Yeah. So, but yeah, it didn't, because it was all there tumbling out. It was therapy to me to write the book.
Cool.
It was just process.
Love it.
Yeah.
Amazing. I'll put it in the show notes so everyone can check it out. But if you're looking for it online, enter Pitch Invasion. Don't try looking for Bitch Invasion. It won't lead you anywhere. Two more of these. On a scale from 1 to 10, how much is football still part of your life today?
Oh, my goodness. It's 9 at least, because I'm still in my WhatsApp fan groups. Because I've now written this book, obviously it's very much about Lewis FC's story, yeah, and Equality FC. So of course, whenever I talk about it, I go and talk about it, or people want to know about it, it's going to be, my story is intertwined with Lewis FC. So I'm still talking about it. And as I say, I'm still, you know, in a very boundaried way, helping with the investment process. So, still a big part of my life. I still go to matches, men's and women's, but mainly women's, and I enjoy it. Mm.
And the last question maybe is the perfect, adding on question here. Would you do it again?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if I was able to do it again with the hindsight, with knowing what I know now, there are some shortcuts I could have taken, of course. But I think it's such a worthwhile cause. And I think it was my privilege and honour to be a custodian of that football club and to work with people that really wanted change and were very disruptive and very radical and very open to someone like me, a complete outsider in football, coming in and saying, you know, I want to do this or that. I mean, really, it was kind of like lots of amazing coincidences coming in at once to enable me to be on the board of a football club.
And I mean, it really should be this big, encouraging story to everyone out there. And it, really, your story is proof what all the men on the executive boards are trying to, you know, keep small or are trying to avoid, is that every woman could be in a leading position anywhere. You don't even have to know football. You have to be smart. You have to be disruptive. You have to be willing to work hard and be willing to accept change. And you're really showing that you don't have to like football, that you don't have to be in football to make a change there and take on a leading role.
Yeah, I would say you have to feel a strong sense of mission or purpose.
Mm.
And when you have that, other things fall by the wayside, because you always have this strong aim, yes, and you know where you're going. And that for me is the thing that really propels you forward. You know, that's it's a brilliant thing if you can find, in anywhere that you are, anything that you're doing, if you can find a mission and attach yourself to a mission, like, you know, like a fly on the back of a massive stallion, that's what I would say, then you can move forward, and you don't care so much about the obstacles, because you know they're going to come, and you just keep moving forward.
I love it. And Karen, you did something that, because you told me before we started this podcast that you've never listened to a Team Lisa episode before. The episodes always end with our team members, with our guests, giving a little pep talk, a little, you know, motivational speech to our audience on why you have to believe in your goals and why you must not stop working on them.
You see, the universe is working in our favor, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
It knew that I was going to be asked that, and now I've just done it like that. So that's why you just have to believe in your goals, because I mean, if you keep, do you know what I do? I have yellow post-it notes sometimes. If I got one here, here's one. This yellow post-it note says, you belong in this room, right? In case I get a lack of confidence or doubt myself. That just gives me a little hint, a little bit of motivation that I do belong in this room. Of course I do. And I have to remember my goal, which is, well, actually, my goal is to empower women and men together, really, by empowering women.
Yeah, which is what feminism is about, right? People forget that. Feminism doesn't mean up with the ladies, down with the guys.
It doesn't.
It means everyone can be whatever they want. And if it means that you're a guy and you want to be in a marriage with another man, that's totally fine. And you can cry and you can have and feel your emotions publicly. And you're not soft. And
yes,
it's not a bad thing. And, you know, you don't have to kill yourself. That's what you said earlier. That's what feminism is.
Everyone should in this world have an environment for them where they can feel at ease, like not feel threatened and feel at ease. And that, you know, so I might say that my goal is like equality, and it's not really, it is, but what is behind that is wanting people to feel accepted, not threatened, included. And that is, it's so simple to say, but you know, obviously it's a challenge, it's a journey, and I'll never stop. I that's what I believe is correct, is right, you know.
Karen, thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you so much for bringing your vibe, your, you know, really your will to make a difference here to our podcast, to our team. It meant the world. All the best for anything that you guys are doing moving forward. Really hoping you will find a great investor that will help the cause. Stay in touch. You're a team member now. So happy to have you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so much fun and a real pleasure. Thank you.